Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Hyundai, supporting the drive to keep our distance. chse.ie for more.
Good morning, and you're very welcome to the show on this beautiful bank holiday weekend. What could possibly go wrong on a weekend like this, you'd be tempted to think, but there you go. Listen, if you wanted proof that the world is gone mad, it's on the front page of the Irish Times today. The strapline for Jennifer O'Connell's piece today is that Sil Fox is wrong to say Me Too has gone too far, but he has a point about the movement's rallying cry. So who would have thunk that Sil Fox would become a reference point, being backed up by the feminists in the Irish Times for his intervention on the Me Too movement. The main story in the Irish Times, I'll tell you what, if you're looking through the papers today and you're thinking, OK, what's the next thing? What's the future? The future is we're all going to be whales now. We're going to be living in pods. And that is the situation. So we know that the creches are going to be pods. And now the lead story in the Irish Times today saying that in the schools there will be, we'll be in pods as well. This is, of course, the Taoiseach has confirmed now that primary and secondary schools will reopen in August. I mean, that was a daft week in terms of... I know that a lot of you think out there that, oh, the parents only want the schools open because, you know, to suit themselves and everything. But there's no doubt like that there is a lot of stress on families out there who are trying to work and run homeschools and everything else. And they feel the children are suffering. So we had Joe McEwen and Sarah McInerney on, was it Thursday morning, and basically said, with the social distancing, hard to see them all back at school, which is kind of common sense in a way. It said it here last weekend. But then that night on prime time, Joe McHugh came out furious about that previous interview in the morning and saying that he wasn't having it. And he was responding to his own interview and he said he would not accept this. So then the Taoiseach on Friday said that the schools will be going back in at the end of August. But note the little footnote there, as fully as possible. They also appear to have noticed that children with special needs are regressing, and they're going to do something about that in July. Children with special needs have been regressing for months now, and Taoiseach spoke about it a month ago on the Late about doing something. So now it seems it might happen in another month. That's a lot of regression, guys, and a lot of hard-won independence and hard-won education by parents and teachers and everything else all being frittered away there. The other story on the front of the Irish Times that would catch your eye is, you know what you think? I think we underestimated Phil Hogan in this country. Talk about a prophet in his own land. Now it seems Hogan is exploring the idea of becoming the Director General of the World Trade Organization. So there you go, going from strength to strength, Phil Hogan. The Irish Examiner, we're on track to move to the next phase. That's Leo Varadkar. And they also, in that piece of IBEX, Danny McCoy, they sent a letter yesterday. So look, what they're demanding is the removal of quarantine restrictions, the replacement of 2 metre social distancing to 1 metre, and the end of lockdown by the end of June. The Examiner also saying public servants could work from home one day a week, so they'll be in working from their pods at home. A lot of people will be working from their pods at home for the time being, so it's pod life in the near future, certainly. The Mirror today has schools around the corner. Leo announces the reopening of schools. They also, there's a line inside in the Mirror from Tony Holohan where he says people would like to see things happening as quickly as possible, and I would be one of them. So I think a lot of people will be glad to hear that, because a lot of people might not have thought he was one of those people. The Independent has healthcare scrambles as private hospitals reopen. Doctors are expecting a major surge in patients whose treatment has been on hold for months following the decision by the government to scrap the controversial takeover of private hospitals. So there is your second surge right there. That's a guaranteed second surge, whatever about the other second surge. The Irish Daily Mail, elder need denied tests for COVID-19. So Dr. Marcus de Bruyn has said that nursing home residents were treated like livestock. Doctors and care homes were instructed that if one resident tested positive for the virus, others should not be tested, as it was to be assumed they already had it. He makes an interesting point inside. He says we are now in this terrible lockdown with terrible social and economic consequences, and it's all because we're supposed to be protecting the vulnerable and the elderly. The huge irony is that they weren't protected at all. They were marginalised from the very start. So he has a point there, I think. And then to end up between Sil Fox and there's a great picture of Brendan Boyer on the front of the Irish Times as well in mid-flight. It's like Spotlight magazine today. The Irish Sun has Dickie Rock and Johnny Logan. So this is hilarious. So you know that Dickie Rock and Johnny Logan had this spat, right? When I think Johnny questioned Dickie's mega stardom. So Eurovision legend Johnny Logan has turned down a planned peace concert with rival Dickie Rock. The Star 65 said, this is why he said he was, so RT asked him to do a concert together at Christmas. This is why Johnny Logan said he wouldn't do it. He said he's too busy. He's too busy. That's all. He didn't even bother making up a good excuse. He might as well have said that he was washing his hair. Now, so another bank holiday weekend, and of course it's a scorcher out there, and the Gardaí are going to be hitting the beaches and the parks. Galway has shut down a lot of spots where people would be congregating, because congregating is of course the new crime now. So we thought, as we did on the last bank holiday weekend, that we check in with Pete Lunn, who is head of the behavioural research unit at the ESRI, and he is also part of the ominously named NFET behavioural change group. Pete Lunn, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
Pete Lunn, are we all still in this together?
We are, absolutely we are, and that's one of the most important things to understand, that this remains what behavioural scientists call a coordination problem. It remains the case as we come out of this, as it was when the number of cases was climbing, that our outcomes all depend on the behaviour of each other.
Yes, but is there any sense, Pete, that we had this sense of collective destiny all the time, but are people starting to focus back a little bit on their individual destinies at this stage? Is the lockdown unravelling slightly?
I don't think so, no. Let me tell you what I think is behind this. On the way up, it was easy. If you're in a collective action problem, and that sound absolutely mad for me to say that now, but from a psychological point of view, in a sense, it's true, and it's true in the following sense, that the goal was very straightforward. Once people realised how serious the situation was, and once people realised that social distancing was the most powerful weapon we had, it was pretty straightforward in a way to get the idea across to everybody that maintaining social distance was paramount, and that was the best thing to do to fight this virus, and that what we needed to do was get the number of cases down and to flatten that curve. So when you're in a coordination problem and you're trying to get everybody to behave in everybody else's best interest, the clarity of the message and the understanding that there are certain behaviours that are best for all is crucial. Now, of course, on the way out, that's now much harder.
Yeah, do you think, is the clarity of the message gone a bit, Pete?
Well, I don't think it has, to be fair, but I think what's difficult now is that people are less likely to agree that it is the message that is best for all. So what I was about to say is we are now no longer in a simple situation. We have to get the number of cases down. We're in a trade-off. We know that if we go too fast, we increase the risk of a second wave and of more infections and of nasty public health outcomes. And we know if we go too slow, we are prolonging huge economic and social damage. So we are now in a trade-off, where there are arguments on both sides for going faster or slower, and someone's got to strike a balance. Now, when you're in those circumstances, of course, getting complete agreement over the right balance to strike is really, really hard, because people have different value systems, they have different preferences, and they also have a different appetite for risk. Some people would happily go faster and take more risk, and some people want to go slower and take less.
Yeah,
but
it's
now
part of it as well.
Trade-off, it's harder.
It's part of it as well, Pete, that there are winners and losers emerging here, and some people feel that they're paying more of a price.
Absolutely, although I think that was true on the way up too. I mean, there was no question that younger adults were paying more of a mental health price, even though they were less at risk from the disease. And we could see that in all of the data, because, you know, their social lives are being curtailed, and that's what their happiness overwhelmingly depended upon, more so than family
life. It's much more than their social lives. If you are a young person now, your education is being destroyed, your chance of starting in a career is being destroyed, and whatever career you have is potentially being destroyed as well. Like, there are hundreds of millions of young people are having their futures devastated all over the world.
I completely agree with you. I'd add relationship formation to that. So we are in a trade-off. We can see that there is damage on both sides, and there's huge economic and social damage being caused. And at the same time, there is a huge health risk to us, which has already proven itself. So we're in that trade-off, and people will resolve that in different ways. Here's an important thing I think about that, though. If you catch anybody talking only on one side of that trade-off, so all they're talking about is the economic and social damage, or all they're talking about is the risk, we need to be picking them up on it. And when lobby groups are doing that, we need to be pointing out all the time that this trade-off exists and this is about where we strike a balance.
But hang on a minute. Are they not the ones striking the balance? Because the trade-off so far has been that we have been completely led by just health advice. So did everyone not agree that we needed to bring an economic element to this, and that's their job?
To some extent, yes. I don't agree that until this point, incidentally, we've only been led by health advice. I mean, I think ever since, I'm not speaking for the government here. I work for the ESRI. I'm completely independent of the government. But I mean, to be fair to the government, the situation is that they've been talking about the economic and social damage for a long time. And as soon as the roadmap was published, that was first and foremost in what the idea of the roadmap was, to get us back towards normality again. And in fact, we know from the research that the roadmap is faster than the majority of the population expected. The other thing we know, and we got data back this week, is actually the speed at which we're going is roughly what the population want. And whether they're right or not, I don't know. But we've already surveyed this. We've asked people, do you think that the lifting of the restrictions is going too fast or too slow? The majority think it's about right, with an even break on either side of too fast or too slow.
Yeah,
so actually, the population thinks it's about bang on at the moment. But of course,
it's funny. I saw that research earlier in the week. But would you not agree that it's almost a mainstream view in media now, and it's certainly a mainstream view among a lot of Fianna Fáil politicians, the Labour Party, and others, that we are coming out too slowly compared to everybody else?
Well, it depends what you call mainstream, I guess. I mean, I'm looking as a behavioural scientist. I'm looking at what the population think. Throughout this, there has been a problem of people who make the most noise being assumed to be in some way right or having a stronger argument. I don't think that's true. If you look at the population think at the moment the balance is about right. We know as well that more than 60% of the population are expecting a second wave. They think it's more likely than not, and they're really worried about it. And they
yeah,
want to go
but 60% of the population are not health experts, are they? I mean, the fact that they're all expecting a second wave is just because they've been told about a second wave. Why would you put any store in what 60% of the population think?
Well, of course, I agree with that. But you were asking me about mainstream opinion. So that's why I'm putting some.
Yeah, I was talking about mainstream opinion in politics and in the media. Come here. Do you agree, Pete, that that a lot of people are not complying with social distancing now? A lot of people are out in groups of more than four and they're not staying 2 metres apart.
There is certainly an issue with compliance. Yes, I agree. I think it remains the case. The overwhelming majority are complying. I mean, again, the data we've got would suggest that. And actually, again, the population agree with that. I mean, most of the population think most of the rest of the population is complying, but they also think there's a minority that are not. And we can see that. And again, it's more likely among younger people. And it's more
Did
likely
I not
among
see
male.
Today that only half of the population think that the majority are complying? That
no,
not in research
yeah.
in one of the papers today?
Yeah. No,
so half think that right, the majority aren't complying?
You're right. It's just over. Yeah.
OK, so that's hardly like an overwhelming majority. That means half the people think that that people aren't complying. You see, I wonder then, Pete, is the danger that if the rules get out of step with reality and that if people have moved on and reality and the rules start diverging, it all falls apart very quickly then, even if you have a minority doing that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we need to be really, really careful. As I said right from the start here, it's become harder. Right, we're now in a trade-off where people wouldn't agree about what the balance point is. We're no longer in a single-sided game where we're just trying to push the number of infections down. So once people start disagreeing, and as you say, it becomes more obvious that different groups are being affected in different ways, keeping our solidarity is going to be much more difficult.
Are the rules getting a bit confusing for people as well, in the sense that we were told not to have picnics? Then I think some people's perception would be Leo Varadkar had a picnic and suddenly you were told have a picnic but use your common sense. And are we now relying on people using their common sense? Is it kind of up to people themselves now at this stage?
Right, so that is a really good question. And I think as we move into the coming phases, we're going to have to rely more and more on people having their own perception of what the risks are that are involved in each of the behaviours they might be undertaking in each of the contexts that they might be going into. And one of the things that's going to be really important, actually, is that we get the public health advice to tool people up better to make those judgments for themselves. Because you're absolutely right. As things get more complicated and we're involved in much more economic activity in different social circumstances as restrictions lift, it's almost impossible to live all of those scenarios by a set of rules. So we're going to have to use more judgment, and that means people are going to have to understand where the risks lie. What is a more risky activity? What makes an activity risky versus not activity? And we need to get the public health advice such that we can do that. Now, at the moment, my lab's trying to test some of these things and trying to see how the public is really perceiving risk and how we can make those perceptions more accurate. Because you're absolutely right. Individual judgment is going to become more and more important as time goes on.
Okay, Pete Lund, thank you very much.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, over the past few weeks, we've broadcast audio diaries of people's experiences in this time of pandemic, and we have another diary for you now. And this is wonderful. This is Abby Mahan. And Abby is 20-something. She's from Blessington in Wicklow. And she works as a social worker with people with disabilities in a residential setting in Naas. And we first hear from Abigail now on the way into work for a 12-hour shift.
Hi, my name is Abby. I'm getting ready for another 12-hour waking night. So now we are taking our temperatures before we walk into the house. You have to go down into one of the rooms and we have to get changed into full PPE. So we're putting on scrubs, gloves, aprons, masks, shields, goggles, the aprons, their long sleeves and their plastic. And it's been really sunny the last few days. So they stick to you. You're sweating. The mask is making your glasses fog up and it's cutting into the top of my nose. It's now hurting to wear glasses even without the mask. But I don't mind wearing it because it keeps my service users safe. And I would never want to make one of them sick. Some of them are finding it very difficult. When we wear the PPE, so we're wearing the masks, they can't tell whether you're smiling or you're sad or you're angry. Also, as well, that it's very difficult for them to hear us because the voice is slightly muffled. It can be quite scary and concerning for them because they don't understand why last week they could take you by the hand and walk up the hall. And this week we're trying to keep our distance. And this is hard on them. At the moment, they are doing extremely well. You couldn't be prouder. The staff are trying their hardest. Though we're all stressed out because we're all thinking of the service users. We're thinking of the other staff members. And we're also thinking of our own family at home. And a lot of that can be quite upsetting for staff. But the team that I'm working with at the moment are incredible. With all the changes to rosters and all these new procedures that we're putting in, we are always still having a smile and a laugh around the house, making the house feel as normal as possible. At the moment, I'm sitting outside my house in my car. I'm just after finishing a 12-hour shift. Before I go into my house, I'll take off my shoes and leave them at the front door. I'll straight away have a shower, go into my PJs and put the clothes I wore last night into the washing machine. At the moment, my mum is still working, but my dad is at home. So there's a lot more noise in the house. You'll hear my dad doing something out the back or mowing the lawn. So it's a lot more difficult to fall asleep.
Good afternoon. I am just after waking up. So no PPE for the next week, which I'm delighted about. Give my face a little bit of a rest from the masks. They dig into your face. One of the things that I have started since COVID, I usually do a 6-kilometre walk. Now, I used to go to the gym, but there's something more peaceful and you're seeing neighbours from across the road. You would not see them from one end of the year to the other and you're stopping and you're talking to them. I am someone who suffers with anxiety and I like keeping busy. I like being organised. I like knowing what I'm doing when I'm doing it. I am now realising that I don't need to keep busy. I go to the water and I just sit. I think I go for my walk. I organise my life in my head. I organise all the problems that are going on and all the stresses so that I'm finally sorting out my anxiety. One thing that I have found very difficult is the fact of not being able to see my friends. We are still all at the end of a phone call. The other day, me and the girls video called each other. We got all dressed up. We curled our hair. We put on makeup. We put on pretty dresses. And we were like, well, we can't go out for a dance, but we'll get all dressed up and we'll have the conversation as if we were getting ready to go out. It was normal. It was nice. We weren't sitting there looking at each other with nothing to say because there's not a lot of news going around. Good evening. This is probably going to be my last voice clip. At the moment, I'm setting up my computer for a date night. The two of us have been going out for the last 6 years. And at the moment, both of us are saving up for a mortgage. So he is in his parents' house and I'm in my parents' house. There's a 17-kilometer distance between the two of us. So we're unable to see each other during COVID. So we'll both order in takeaway. And the two of us will watch a movie together. And just talk and just have a normal conversation. So it's a big reality change of not being able to see each other every week. And it's quite tough. I'll probably be one of the last people in my family to meet up with family and friends. Because I work with vulnerable adults. I would never put my service users' lives at risk. I have a new normality of video calls.
That was Abigail Mahan, social worker there. And wouldn't that give you faith in humanity? And Abby, thank you. And thanks to the tens of thousands of Abigails that there are all over the country, all making those small little sacrifices and doing it to help other people. And on that note, there's a nice letter in the Irish Times today from John McHugh, who's the deputy principal in Loretto Secondary School. And he's talking about it being the end of the school year and how they're missing the end of year rituals and celebrations, or to say a warm farewell to our students and staff in person. He says, we miss them greatly. They've endured a lot in the last 11 weeks and must be commended for their commitment, courage and resilience. They've already secured their place in Irish Education's Hall of Fame and we thank them. That's John McHugh, Deputy Principal of Loretto Secondary School. That's nice, isn't it? Now, I think a lot of people coming around to accepting the fact that they won't be going abroad on holidays this year. So holidays at home are going to be in high demand. Travel writer Fionn Davenport joins me now and he's going to talk us through some options. Good morning, Fionn.
Morning to you, Brendan.
So listen, you think it's going to be a busy summer in Ireland this year?
Yes, I think it's going to be perhaps not as busy as summers past because obviously we're going to have very few international visitors. And as much as we may be starved of a foreign holiday and we'll try and make up for that deficit by travelling around Ireland, not everybody is going to be as easy to kind of just get into a car and skip off. I think it's going to be cautious, but I do think in terms of, well, compared to now, I think it's going to be much busier than you might even imagine it to be right now.
Yeah. Listen, you don't see people travelling abroad this summer at all, Fionn, no?
No, there's a combination of things. One, it's the 14-day quarantine, both in some countries that you have to travel to, but more importantly, it's when you return home. So the idea that like, oh, I want to go spend a week in Spain or 10 days in Spain, but I have to quarantine for 14 days when I come back is an unappealing prospect. I think for other people, the idea of getting on a plane is unappealing, despite the fact that, and I don't know if you've seen it, but Aer Lingus came out with a video yesterday, Ryanair came out with one last week, and it really is an indication of what the future for flights are, at least for the foreseeable future, which is, you know, a huge amount of contactless experience, limiting, you know, any kind of engagement, social distancing, masks for all passengers and crew, and also airplanes that are hyper disinfected. And yeah, Here's a little fun fact for you, but and I only learned this just from basically the last few weeks, is that, you know, when you get on a plane and that aircon that's above your head, I always turn mine off because I'm like, oh, I don't want it to be cold. You should always leave that on because the air filtering tech on planes is as sophisticated as that in an operating theater, and it'll recirculate the air and give you brand new air in the entire cabin every 3 minutes. So the idea is that airplanes are this kind of hive of infection isn't actually as true as perhaps I would have thought so before, or a lot of people still do.
But I think we are going to be nervous about going into situations where you cannot control your environment. And an airplane could feel a little bit like that, whatever you might think in advance, I think, when it comes down to the idea of it. So listen, there's lots of talk of reunion breaks. What are reunion breaks?
Well, I mean, given that we have spent the guts of the year, really, so since the beginning of March, isolating at home with our immediate families, or in some cases, just on our own. I think the idea of getting to see family that you haven't been able to see, friends that you haven't been able to see, are going to be a big, big thing. And so some hotels are offering these kind of breaks that are encouraging people to come together, but also at the same time maintaining social distancing regulations. So for instance, I'll give you a good one. So Ardna Hu is this eco-retreat in North Leitrim, really gorgeous spot. They have these three eco-cabins that are all fully self-catering and perfect in an ideal world for family breaks. But like what they're doing is they're introducing, along with a lot of other accommodations, is non-contact check-ins. The three cabins are 12 meters apart. So even if you just pick one, you're going to maintain a good distance from someone in the other cabin. Everywhere is deep cleaned between rentals, obviously. And during the lockdown, they've been focused on reinventing the ground. So they've got this, like, you can do yoga, you can go cycling, you can do lots of different things. And the prices are actually pretty good. At the moment, for the week, if you wanted a cabin that sleeps too, it's €595 for the whole week, which I think is terrific in high season.
Okay. Really are prices going to go up on domestic holidays as the demand goes up?
Yeah, you'd have to think that they would. I mean, one is that there's going to be a limited stock of accommodations. And by that I mean is that, and I saw quotes this week from various people in the IHF, in the Irish Hotel Federation, which are saying that the new full is going to be 40 to 50%. So,
okay.
And so that's it. You've got limited stock. You have an overwhelming demand as people who can't go abroad all of a sudden go, well, I need a holiday. I desperately need a holiday, so I'm going to stay at home. And also it's worth considering, Brendan, like the industry, the tourism industry, which is not some monolithic thing, it's made up of thousands of small operators, is looking to stave off disaster. So it's easier to understand how they might be engaged in a little kind of price hiking. As demand goes, the prices will go up. So book early. And if you don't, like come July and August, I imagine that the premium properties will be quite pricey.
And I imagine as well that people are going to want to go, aren't they, to the places they know and places they've been before.
Well, that's absolutely a huge... I think, well, there's a combination. One is yes. I think part of not going abroad is the unfamiliarity of this new existence. And so I'm going to go discover a place where I can control my environment that is familiar to me, that I know exactly where I'm going to stay, I know where the shops are, I know where I can eat, etc. And... but also at the same time, it's a great opportunity to kind of explore other parts of the country that perhaps you mightn't be that familiar with. I don't know, like, for example, people who have spent all of their home holidays visiting, say, Cork or Kerry or the southeast might go, you know what, maybe North Mayo or Donegal, for instance, which, again, I mean, the coastlines are always the big attraction, aren't they? But I think it's about managing your environment, and I think that's going to be much more important now than at any other time before.
Okay, now camping is something that people have been talking about, and apparently tents are being bought up at a ferocious rate. You wanted to mention the Hidden Valley Resort in County Wicklow. Tell us about that.
So this is one that, and I know that it gets really, like, it gets very high marks from anybody who's been, and so it's a brilliant campsite. It's got boutique lodges. So you can go kind of plain pitch a tent, your basic camping, or you could do some glamping. And they've even got a water park. Now, I don't know that water park is going to reopen this summer. It is worth mentioning that everything I say is all dependent on a July 20th reopening, all things being equal, all things going well.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of hotels, a lot of accommodations are saying, sure, we're scheduled to reopen on the 20th of July. But, like, you know, if things changes, that date might be pushed back. So anyway, but camping, you're absolutely right. Camping is going to be massive precisely because you have this, I won't say hermetically sealed, but fairly self-controlled environment that you can say, right, we're going to stay here, we're going to pitch our tent X amount of meters away from the next person. And again, you can maintain social distancing and safety. But Hidden Valley Resort is not far from Dublin. It's an it's near Rathdrum. It's in an absolutely gorgeous part of Wicklow. And and they've also got a restaurant that is going to reopen as part of Phase 3. So that's on June 29th.
Okay, you're also suggesting... You're also suggesting yurts in Donegal.
Oh, yeah, at Lochmardale in Donegal. So it's about a 20-minute drive south of Donegal town, maybe half an hour from Rosnaula. And so it accommodates relatively small number of guests every night. And the yurts are all very well separated, well spaced from each other. And it's about the great outdoors, because I think the great outdoors is going to be hugely important as we kind of avoid internal spaces where we might be forced to be too close to people and so break social distancing laws. You've got this communal lodge, but at 400 square meters, it's massive. And they're going to control entry. So again, social distancing is going to be maintained. And one of the nice things about this place is that every room has multiple entry and exit points. The showers are wet rooms, fully contained. There's no shared changing rooms. So you, again, have access and exit from these places entirely to yourself. And the yurts go from €241, which sounds like a lot, but when you consider like how absolutely luxurious they are, it's actually a pretty good price.
Okay. In situations like that, are bathrooms, shower rooms, etc. going to be an issue?
I think so. And I think that what a lot of campsites are going to be doing is controlling access. It's the same, I think, timed entry. So you book your slot is going to be the norm for us all, whether in a restaurant or, as you said, in a shower room. So we're going to have to get used to this. Now, I know that Fáilte Ireland are in the process of publishing guidelines for the tourism industry, which now they haven't come out just yet. But in that, it'll be a comprehensive guide to how exactly all of these possible interactions are going to be conducted. So, for instance, it's not a simple case of just getting up in the morning, waking up in the great outdoors and go, gee, I think I'll fancy a shower. It's like, well, your shower slot is from 8 a.m. to 8:15 or 8:30 or whatever it is, and you have to stick rigidly to it, otherwise you'll miss it. The same, I think, with dining. Self-catering is going to be much more popular this year than at any other time.
You would imagine, yeah.
Well, you can control your environment. You can go to the market. You can buy your food. You can cook it at home. But if you're going to go to a restaurant, timed dining is going to be, you're going to make a reservation. The restaurant will have X amount of seats available at any sitting. You will arrive at your sitting and you will leave. And then the next wave will come in.
Okay, sure. Look, it all sounds a bit technical now, but we'll all get used to all of this, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, Fionn Davenport, thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, look, a lot of you pointing out the contrast between Abby, our social worker, and Hudson, our underground hairdresser, turns text to 51551 to say, what a great person Abby is. Great listen, deserves a second play. As for Hudson, maybe he should listen to this wonderful person. Niamh in Cork says, big contrast there between the attitude of Hudson, the hairdresser, and his shallow justification for his actions, and the fabulous Abby who acts with such care and integrity. A tale of two Irelands. And that's from Niamh in Cork. And now let's go to our People's Pandemic Poet Laureate, Rita Ann Higgins. Good morning, Rita Ann.
Good morning, Brendan.
And this week it's A Few Morsels for the Mortals. Off you go.
In Greek mythology, the phoenix rises out of the ashes to live another day. In homegrown mythology, the phoenix was only an owl peacock in disguise. See no virus, hear no virus, ergo, where the virus? Not in Pea Park on a sunny Sunday in May, where PIC still means person in charge. Let's picnic on higher ground with our tinnies and our shirts off. Let's stand and clink. It's all about the optics. Who could blame us for seeking a bit of boy candy? Truth is, we didn't seek it. It was foisted upon us. That said, it allowed us to take our eyes off the virus and let them fall on the pecs and the hips and the picnic basket and the ball. With six packs of confusion and more mixed messages than you'd find in a Matt Damon plastic bag, we, the pandemic schmucks, yawned and looked askance at our forfeit. We demonised our little vectors who were not vectors at all. and deprive them of hugs for months on end. We can hug them now and check them for head lice and ringworm at the same time. Moshiv, nevet. We sent our parents and grandparents to the abyss, dropped a bag on their porch and ran. No, it wasn't a Matt Damon bag. It was a bag full of trans fats and treacle, giving them diverticulitis on top of post-traumatic stress disorder. But we did keep them from larking in the park and 2 metres apart when a metre mattered in the interest of something or other. This is Gull Park, not Pea Park. Here the raucous sounds from gulls and crows are pushing up the serial killer proclivity we didn't know we had, prompting us to hiss out the incantation. Give us a meter and we'll take a mile. And what do we have to do to get a few cans around here? We are regular mortals after all. No super pecs of any kind. No mythology to magic away our gripes and groans. Not least while there is a pandemic flapping around our 4 green fields. We'll take some treats from a safe distance, a few morsels for the mortals. Our reckoning, which is skewed by more than 2 metres in a crooked mile, has some innate sensibility which coaxes us to look up to the PIC. We don't judge the pecs, hips, socks, the picnic basket or the ball. All we really desire is the phoenix to rise and the peacock to fall.